Qatar calls on Persian Gulf Arab countries to hold talks with Iran, describing it as a desire shared by other Arab states. The Iranian Army's ground force holds military exercises south of the country. China says it opposes the United States suppressing Chinese companies. This after President Trump ordered an assessment of security risks from Chinese drones. I'm your host, Behrouz Najafi. Good to have you with us. Starting with some reaction from a number of literal states of the Persian Gulf, Qatar calling on the Arab countries in the region to hold talks with Iran to resolve any dispute. Foreign Minister Sheikh Mohammed bin Abdulrahman Al Thani says that he's hopeful that such talks will happen. He says this is also a desire shared by other members of the Persian Gulf Cooperation Council. The top Qatari diplomat says that his country will facilitate negotiations if asked by stakeholders. Last month, GCC members Saudi Arabia, Bahrain, and the UAE re-established diplomatic ties with Qatar after breaking them off in June 2017. The trio broke the ties at that time partly because of Qatar's relations with Iran. Tehran has repeatedly said it's open to any initiative that helps ease tensions in the Persian Gulf region. A political commentator, Leis Maruf, says that Qatar is trying to revive its mediating role to support imperial interests in the region as a new U.S. president is set to enter the White House.
So Qatar is returning to its original role that was there 5 years ago before Trump came into power, which is to play this hidden role of providing support for imperial positions in the region under the guise of supposed democracy and representation. So Iran has to be very careful from engaging in something like this and wasting another 5-6 years of negotiation with the U.S. while the United States gets to rearrange its forces in the region to confront the axis of resistance.
Now, phase two of the larger-scale maneuvers by the ground force of the Iranian army has been conducted south of the country. The drill saw special forces successfully carry out joint airborne and combat operations. The exercise also involved divers who landed on the sea and submerged deep down to destroy the projected targets. Divers then made it onto the shore and struck enemy targets there. The drills also included electronic warfare, that is, operation to jam the enemy's command control systems. Earlier on Tuesday, the Army conducted phase one of its maneuvers. During those drills, domestically developed tactics were used to boost the rapid reaction troops' preparedness to break into enemy lines.
The ground forces of Iran's army kicked off war games along the Makran coasts of the Sea of Oman, southeast of Iran. The drills called Iqtadar or Power 99 started with the participation of airborne units, special forces, and quick reaction units. The troops received logistical and combat support from the Air Force and the Army Ground Forces Airborne Division at the coastal zones in Hormozgan province. A combination of homegrown and creative military tactics was practiced in the offense exercise based on the new structure of the ground forces.
The main purpose of the war games is to evaluate the mobility and offense power of the rapid reaction forces and corps and the mobile offense units of the Army ground forces. They also practice rapid and decisive response to threats on the hypothetical enemy's coasts.
Press TV talked to Iran's Army Commander Major General Abdulrahim Mousavi, who attended the drills, asking him if the extensive war games are in reaction to U.S. deployment of forces to the region in recent weeks.
It seems that the Americans are somehow confused and are suffering from indecisiveness. This is the first time in the U.S. history that they are in a very inappropriate condition. Our drills are generally preemptive, but as they may make some insane moves, we stage these maneuvers to say we are ready against any calculation error by the adversaries.
We also talked to the war games commanders, who gave more details regarding the drills on the land and at the sea.
Our parachuters descended from planes and then got on armored personnel carriers to approach the mock enemy targets and destroy them. In another part of the exercise, some special forces and divers will descend from choppers on the sea surface to get to the beach and fight mock enemy forces.
The Iranian military forces have held several massive maneuvers over the past few weeks. The importance of this year's drills conducted by the Army's forces relies on the native nature of the equipment used in the event. Almost all of the equipment used in the war games this year are homegrown. Human Abedi, Josk.
We're earlier joined by the spokesman for the ongoing Iranian military drills. Kumars Sharafi provided us with some details about the maneuvers.
These drills featured an operation, a joint airborne operation by Brigade 55 of the Airborne Division of the Land Force, using transport planes from the farthest point in the country. And these operations featured parachuters of Airborne Division's land, and they conducted a joint airborne operation successfully. The operation was conducted successfully. One of the features of these maneuvers is the transportation operations, airborne transportation. Rapid reaction forces and special forces also took part, and given the actually threats that the country is facing. And we, in these drills, we managed to conduct operations in an area which has been designated for the drills, and we conducted land operations as well.
In other news, Beijing has stressed its opposition to what it calls Washington's suppression of Chinese companies amid growing row between the two countries.
Some people in the U.S. have always made irresponsible remarks about China's military development, to which China expresses its firm opposition.
The Chinese Foreign Ministry spokeswoman was reacting to an order by outgoing President Trump for an assessment of security risks from Chinese-made drones. Trump's executive order, just 2 days before his presidential term, directed U.S. agencies to prioritize removing those drones from American fleets in case of security risks. That's a month after Washington added China's drone maker to its economic blacklist, and that was one of the series of anti-China measures that the Trump administration has taken over the past 4 years. Washington and Beijing are at loggerheads over a number of issues, ranging from trade and Hong Kong to the South China Sea. The United States are approaching 400,000, and that according to latest data by Johns Hopkins University. The U.S. death toll is higher than that of any other country in the world. It also has the largest infection tally, more than 24 million cases. Currently, California is the hardest hit U.S. state by the pandemic. On Monday, it became the first American state to record more than 3 million infections. Meantime, multiple states have reported cases of the new COVID variant first detected in the UK. And that has raised concern, even though daily infections have been trending down in the U.S. over the past week. In the meantime, the German government is mulling extending and tightening a partial lockdown in the country amid growing fears of the spread of more contagious coronavirus variant that was first detected in Britain. Reports saying that Chancellor Angela Merkel and regional leaders are likely to agree on a two-week extension of a nationwide lockdown that's set to expire by the end of this month. In a draft resolution, the government reportedly proposed further restrictive measures in public and more aid for companies. Officials say the existing lockdowns have already lowered infection rates. The new protocols are aimed at controlling new COVID strains that have been found in many countries. Germany has reported more than 47,000 corona-related deaths and 2 million confirmed cases. The World Health Organization is saying that the planet is facing a catastrophic moral failure because of unequal COVID vaccine policies.
I need to be blunt. The world is on the brink of a catastrophic moral failure. And the price of this failure will be paid with lives and livelihoods in the world's poorest countries.
The WHO chief says that more than 39 million doses of vaccines have been distributed in at least 49 higher-income nations. And that is while one poor country had only received 25 doses. He urged all countries to work together to ensure that medical workers and the elderly get vaccinated in the first 100 days this year. Vaccination has started in some countries with the already authorized COVID vaccines. Now, government debt continues to grow in the EU, and the bloc's social crisis will deepen further, and that is the stark assessment of Eurozone finance ministers who have held a video conference to talk about the impact of COVID-19. Our correspondent in Brussels, Jerome Hughes, reports.
2021 has so far been miserable for millions of business people and their staff across the 27-country European Union. Lots of outlets are being forced to close their doors to prevent the spread of COVID-19, with only essential retailers allowed to remain open.
You see that we have stricter measures than even a few months ago all around Europe.
Finance ministers from the 19-nation Eurozone have just concluded their first meeting of 2021 and warned that social inequality in the EU has yet to peak. Government and personal debt is rising due to the pandemic. We are reminded that the bloc has pre-existing economic problems. For example, in Greece, youth unemployment was running at almost 50% even before COVID-19 came along.
Do not forget the situation in Italy where proper tax system is not in place, and France is facing enormous problems of unemployment.
The EU's spending watchdog, the European Court of Auditors, has been examining the bloc's initial response to the pandemic. During an online interview, a spokesperson told us that better cooperation is required.
Indeed, the EU has to learn lessons going forward, both to react better to the COVID crisis, but indeed to pandemics in the future, because pandemics aren't going away. There will be another one in the future.
EU finance ministers say COVID-19 recovery funding needs to be released without delay and spent wisely by member states. Meanwhile, the bloc's crucial vaccination program is being rolled out too slowly, many health experts argue. Because the bloc is still in the middle of a health emergency and the start of a new economic crisis, analysts say the EU's response will not be fully assessed by citizens until the pandemic passes. Based on current information, perhaps their verdict will not be good. Jerome Hughes, Brussels.
UN Secretary General Antonio Guterres has urged Israel to halt and reverse its recent plan to build new settler units in the occupied West Bank. Guterres says that Israel's settlement construction in the Palestinian territory occupied since 1967 has no legal validity. He says such activities are a flagrant violation under international law. According to the UN chief, Tel Aviv's expansionism further erodes the possibility of ending the occupation and establishing a Palestinian state. Israel approved the construction of 780 new settler units on Sunday following an order by Prime Minister Netanyahu. An Israeli settlement watchdog says that most of the units will be built deep in the West Bank. All Israeli settlements in the occupied Palestinian territories are illegal under international law. Over to Uganda, now the government there has accused the U.S. of attempting to subvert the last week presidential election and the will of the people. Now that reaction came after U.S. Ambassador Natalie Brown tried to visit Ugandan opposition leader Bobi Wine, who is now under house arrest. A government spokesman accuses Brown of blatantly meddling in Ugandan internal politics. It says the American envoy had a track record of causing trouble in countries where she had worked in the past. The U.S. Embassy says that Brown was stopped from visiting Ugandan opposition leader. The embassy says that a last week vote was tainted by harassment of opposition candidates. The election saw incumbent Ugandan president extend his decades-long rule. Wine is accusing him of fabricating the results. As well in the world, and Venezuela is to indict former opposition congressman who plotted with the U.S. to plunder the country's oil assets abroad. The socialist-led Congress has stressed the criminal process is underway against opposition figure Juan Guaido and many of his Congress fellows to help the U.S. Decree the confiscation of Citgo, among other Venezuelan companies. From Caracas, we have a report.
The Venezuelan parliament has announced that it will indict U.S.-backed opposition ex-congressman involved in the illegal confiscation of Venezuelan oil industry assets perpetrated by the U.S. government. The socialist-led Congress, also known as National Assembly, has stated that it will develop the legal process with the country's judiciary system in order to hold accountable those Venezuelans who, in association with the ongoing administration of Donald Trump, inflicted economic damage to the South American country through illegal U.S. sanctions. Among those politicians to be indicted, there is Juan Guaido and many of his associates. The legislative branch says Guaido contributed with Washington in the illegal confiscation of Citgo, the Venezuelan oil company based in the U.S., which is worth billions of dollars. Experts say U.S. and Citgo has caused Venezuela's ongoing scarcity of gasoline nationwide.
Billions of dollars have been robbed from Venezuela through illegal confiscation of Citgo, so Guaido must be held accountable for helping the U.S. in this robbery.
But some opposition members decry the indictment.
The legal process against opposition ex-congressmen are politically motivated, and the excuse is the U.S. sanctions that are not ruled by Venezuelans.
But legal experts say Guaido and his camp are the main collaborators of the U.S. sanctions.
It is documented that Guaido and his cronies requested the U.S. government to issue savage economic sanctions against Venezuela as a strategy to force President Maduro's resignation. Guaido and his team are guilty.
The indictment of the opposition ex-congressman who plotted with the U.S. in the robbery of Venezuela's oil assets abroad is well seen by millions of Venezuelans who nowadays suffer the country's economic crisis caused by U.S. sanctions. Jesus Silva, Caracas.
Adverse weather conditions in Japan have caused a series of car crashes, leaving one person dead. Officials say that 134 vehicles were involved in the chaos that also left a dozen people seriously injured. The accident stretched about a kilometer on the Tohoku Expressway in the northern prefecture of Miyagi. Cars have remained stuck at the crash site and rescue operations are going on. The pileup was caused by heavy snow and blizzards. That's a wrap for this news bulletin. Goodbye.
Join us in this journey, IRIB English Radio. Please log on to our website, www.parstoday.com/en.
in the limelight.
Joe Biden will sign a series of executive orders in his first days in office, attempting to roll back damage done at home and abroad by Donald Trump, whom the Democrat will replace as president on Wednesday, 20th of January. The article you're about to hear has been written by The Guardian journalist Martin Pengelly. The piece is titled, Joe Biden Executive Orders Will Reverse Trump on Climate, Iran, COVID, and More. Stay with us for more of Martin Pengelly's article. Joe Biden will sign a series of executive orders in his first days in office, attempting to roll back damage done at home and abroad by Donald Trump, whom the Democrat will replace as president on Wednesday, 20th of January. Biden, 78, has already outlined plans to send an immigration bill and a COVID stimulus and relief package to a newly democratically controlled Congress. On Friday, 15th of January, he said he would shake up the delivery of vaccines against COVID-19, mired in chaos under Donald Trump's administration. Biden plans to return the United States to the Paris Climate Accord and to the Iran nuclear deal, overturn Donald Trump's travel ban against some Muslim-majority countries, restrict evictions and foreclosures under the pandemic, and institute a mask mandate on federal property. In a memo released on Saturday, the incoming White House Chief of Staff Ron Klein said, "These actions will change the course of COVID-19, combat climate change, promote racial equity and support other underserved communities, and rebuild our economy in ways that strengthen the backbone of this country, the working men and women who built our nation." While the policy objectives in these executive actions are bold, I want to be clear. The legal theory behind them is well-founded and represents a restoration of an appropriate constitutional role for the president. The memo did not mention rejoining the World Health Organization, WHO, previously mentioned as a priority. The incoming White House Chief of Staff, Ron Klein, said, "Subsequent orders would address equity and support communities of color, and address criminal justice reform, access to health care, and other priorities." Donald Trump leaves office impeached twice, the second time over an attack on the U.S. Capitol he incited and which left at least five people dead. The coronavirus pandemic is out of control, the death toll approaching 400,000, the caseload close to 24 million. There were nearly 3,300 deaths on Saturday, according to Johns Hopkins University. The U.S. economy has cratered. Unemployment is rising steeply. Among historians assessing the challenge faced by Joe Biden, the Roosevelt and Lincoln biographer Doris Kearns Goodwin told the Washington Post it was huge. "History has shown when you have crises like this," she said, "it is an opportunity for leaders to mobilize resources of the federal government. All the presidents we remember, they dealt with a crisis. When you're given that chance, the question is, are you fitted for that moment?" Joe Biden will enjoy Democratic control of both houses of Congress, if by a slender margin in the House and by Kamala Harris's casting vote as vice president in a 50-50 Senate. But Senate business, including confirmation of Joe Biden's cabinet nominees, will soon be dominated by Donald Trump's impeachment trial. On Sunday, Ron Klein told CNN's State of the Union program, "It's important for the Senate to do its constitutional duty, but also to do its constitutional duty to move forward on these appointments under urgent action the country needs." During the last time President Trump was tried, the Senate was able to hold confirmation hearings for nominees during the morning and was able to conduct other business. "I hope that the Senate leaders on a bipartisan basis find a way to move forward on all their responsibilities. This impeachment trial is one of them, but getting people into the government and getting action on the coronavirus is another one of those responsibilities." If Donald Trump is convicted, he could be barred from running for office again. 10 Republican House members voted to impeach over the Capitol riot, making Donald Trump's second impeachment the most bipartisan in history. Senior party figures are anxious to move on, but a clear majority of Republican voters support Donald Trump and back his base's claim that the election was stolen through voter fraud. In Congress, 147 Republicans in the House and Senate objected to Electoral College results. Joe Biden has urged unity and pledged to use his experience in Congress, he was a senator for 36 years, to reach across the aisle. But former U.S. Labor Secretary Robert Reich sought to urge the new president towards radical action and away from seeking significant Republican support. "I keep hearing that Joe Biden will govern from the center," Robert Reich wrote. "He has no choice, they say, because he'll have razor-thin majorities in Congress and the Republican Party has moved to the right." "Rubbish. I've served several Democratic presidents who have needed Republican votes for what they've wanted to do. But the Republicans now in Congress are nothing like those I've dealt with. Most of today's GOP live in a parallel universe. There is no center between the reality-based world and their world." Speaking to the Washington Post, House Majority James Clyburn, a key Joe Biden ally and a leading African-American voice, said he had reminded the president-elect of the power of executive orders, which Harry Truman used to desegregate the military and Abraham Lincoln used to begin the end of slavery. The new White House press secretary, Jen Psaki, is scheduled to give a briefing on Wednesday, Inauguration Day, 20th of January, 4 years after Sean Spicer kicked off the Trump presidency by aggressively lying about the size of the crowd for Donald Trump's inaugural address. Joe Biden will speak and take the oath of office amid massive security, a Washington lockdown prompted by fears of new attacks in the wake of the Capitol riot on Wednesday, 6th of January. James Clyburn urged Joe Biden to lay out your vision and invite people to join you in the effort. But if they don't join you, whatever authority you've got, use it.
Questions and answers on Islamic beliefs.
La ilaha illallah, la ilaha illallah.
Answering your doubts and questions, and questions and answers on Islamic beliefs.
Allah, who is Ar-Rahman? Allah, who is Al-Mannan?
La ilaha illallah.
please send us your emails through our email, which is englishradio@irib.ir.
Bismillah ar-Rahman ar-Rahim. In the name of Allah, the most compassionate, the most merciful, may Allah's peace and blessings be upon the Holy Prophet of Islam, Muhammad, and his purified progeny. Dear brothers and sisters, assalamu alaikum and welcome to Q&A in Islamic Beliefs, the show in which we pose different questions received by questioners all over the world concerning Islamic issues, and respected scholars from Qom Samir schools will be helping us in answering the questions. Today's question actually is the continuation of our previous session, where we talked about one of the viewpoints of John Rawls, American philosopher in liberal tradition, where he talked about the justice, and he said that religion or religions are the main obstacle in the way of justice. And moreover, he said that in order to spread justice in the world, you need to remove God or Allah from the scene of the earth and from the beliefs of the people. So this was the topic of discussion, and Sheikh Murtada Karimi, Islamic researcher, answered him and actually explained about this concept and said that which God is he talking about? The God in Christianity environment or in Islam or that is being believed by followers of those religions? These are different, let's say, categories that God can be looked at. And also, what does he know about the justice in the books of, in divine books? And the rest of discussion goes with some Quranic evidences that Sheikh Murtaza is going to, inshallah, present today. Sheikh, assalamu alaikum and welcome to the show.
Wa alaikum assalam and thank you for having me.
Thanks, Sheikh, for accepting the invitation. Sheikhna, continuing our discussion on John Rawls' belief and John Rawls' idea, how can we support the idea that we started in our previous session with Quranic verses?
Bismillah ar-Rahman ar-Rahim. In the previous session, I recited a part of the verse 8 of chapter Ma'idah, which reads, A'udhu billahi minash shaitan ar-rajim, Ya ayyuha alladhina amanu, O you who have faith, Kunu qawwamina lillah shuhada'a bil-qist, Be maintainers as witnesses for the sake of Allah of justice.
Yeah.
Now, the next part of the verse, I said that this is one of the most beautiful verses of the Quran about justice, which says, وَلَا يَجْرِمَنَّكُمْ شَنَآنُ قَوْمٍ عَلَىٰ أَلَّا تَعْدِلُوا. Ill feeling for a people should never lead you to be unfair. Now, this is very interesting, the way the Quran is explaining the concept of justice.
Yeah.
It may happen a lot that people are unjust toward others because of only what is mentioned in the Quran as shana'an, a kind of ill feeling. You hate other people, and that is why you are unjust toward them. For example, you live in a city and as Muslims, you are the majority. And then you have the minority of non-Muslim. Quran says that even if you have this ill feeling toward others, it should not cause you to do injustice against them.
Yeah.
And so this is very interesting, the way the Quran looks at the concept of justice. I think if all the people acts upon this verse of the Quran, there is no injustice in the world. If you have ill feeling against other people, it should not cause you to to do injustice against them. Even if you, two people come to the court, one of them is Muslim and the other is among the minorities, the judge should act upon justice. He should not, his ill feeling toward that non-Muslim should not lead him to make injustice. Shana'an, ill feeling should not cause injustice. And this is very important. I'adilu huwa aqrabu lit-taqwa. Be fair, be just, that is nearer to God-weariness. Wattaqullah, and be wary of Allah. Inna Allaha khabirun bima ta'malun. Allah is indeed well aware of what you do. This is one verse, chapter Ma'idah, verse 8. In another verse, we see that one of the philosophies of Allah subhanahu wa ta'ala sending the prophets is to maintain justice.
Very true.
And again, this is the way Quran looks at the concept of justice. The prophets were sent by Allah subhanahu wa ta'ala for various reasons. One of them was to help the people maintain justice in the society. This has been mentioned in the following verse, where Allah subhanahu wa ta'ala says, أعوذ بالله من الشيطان الرجيم وَلَقَدْ أَرْسَلْنَا رُسُلَنَا بِالْبَيِّنَاتِ. Certainly we sent our apostle with manifest proofs. وَأَنزَلَّ مَعَهُمُ الْكِتَابَ وَالْمِيزَانِ. And we sent down with them the book and the balance. لِيَقُومَ النَّاسُ بِالْقِسْطِ. So that people may maintain justice.
Questions and answers on Islamic beliefs on IRIB English Radio. You can send your questions to englishradio@irib.ir.
With this clear-cut and crystal-clear evidences in Quran, and also there are even some signs and evidences in other divine books, how come a philosopher like John Rawls come to this conclusion that religions are in front and in opposite of justice? Is it just an ordinary and personal decision, or a personal understanding, or it comes from a study or from a source?
I cannot pass a judgment about his intentions, whether he has a negative intention or it's really his belief. I don't want to judge about that. But I think the main reason that caused such scholars to come to these conclusions, is the fact that you mentioned in the previous program.
Yeah.
The fact that they see the followers of the religions, instead of referring to the genuine religion, which is introduced in the main sources, they see the acts done by the people who are the followers of the religions. So they see the people who follow Christianity, and they may do some injustice in the name of Christianity. Some people who claim to be Muslims or Jews, and then they do injustice in the name of Judaism and Islam. The main problem is that these people, these scholars, should change this attitude. Their viewpoint is based on the acts which are done by the followers of the religion. But their judgment is about the religion itself. This is something wrong.
Yeah.
I think what you mentioned in the first program is very important. The fact that they do not distinguish between the religion and the religious teachings and what followers. Is done by the followers of the of these religions.
Sheikh, my question actually stems from this chaos that we see in the words of scholars, namely philosophers, even in the Islam world, that some of them say, some, very few, let's say, that they actually have such ideas with regard to justice, and they believe that, for example, religion is an obstacle on the way of justice. At least they are familiar with the text, and they have no problem in understanding it. So what makes them, even some of the philosophers in Islam world, to say such a thing? Is it, again, as you said, because they see some, let's say, faces like ISIS that was that much strong on them to change their mindset?
So my point is that it's not possible to be a true Muslim and to claim that Islam is the cause of injustice. Because if you're really Muslim, this is what Quran is talking about, the concept of justice. We mentioned that in theology, justice is one of the main principles of belief in many of the Islamic denominations. So if you are Muslim, with these verses. So when in chapter An-Nahl verse 90, Allah subhanahu wa ta'ala says, "Inna Allaha ya'muru bil 'adl." Indeed, Allah enjoins justice.
Mm-hmm.
Now, my question is that these people that you call, I mean, the intellectuals or the philosophers among Muslims, they, if they are really familiar with the verse says that Allah subhanahu wa ta'ala enjoins justice.
Mm-hmm.
This is a very crystal clear verse in the Quran that justice is something asked by Allah subhanahu wa ta'ala from all the Muslims.
Yeah.
Now, with this verse in the Noble Book of Quran, how you are able to claim that Islam is causing injustice while Allah subhanahu wa ta'ala is ordering people to act upon justice? So again, maybe, I mean, when you compare these people to the mainstream of the Muslim philosophers, they are very few in number. I mean, the great majority of the Muslim philosophers, they believe in the fact that religion cannot be the source of injustice. For these people, again, because I repeat my point that if they are really Muslims, they need to give us their understanding from this verse. Inna Allaha ya'muru bil 'adl. Or i'dalu, you need to be just in your action. What is your understanding from this verse?
Yeah.
Do you claim that there is something wrong in the Quran?
Yeah.
In that case, you cannot call yourself a Muslim. Do you believe that Allah subhanahu wa ta'ala is saying something wrong? In that case, you cannot call yourself a Muslim. So the verses of the Quran, of course, we have many narrations as well, but for these people, maybe it's better to just mention some verses, because when it comes to narrations, they may have some excuses to, not to accept the narrations. But the Quran, regarding the concept of justice, is very clear.
Very true. A philosopher whose duty is just to prove existence, and the source of existence is God or divine source,
sure,
actually is going to stand in front of the text. And these are the issues that needs to be discussed in other sessions, that what is the reason that makes them to go this way. These are the issues that, inshallah, we shall discuss them in another session. Thank you very much, Sheikh Murtada, for your beautiful explanations your reference to Quranic verses, improving the discussion and in enlightening the question that was asked. I hope it was quite informative for you, even brothers and sisters who are listening to us. And I want to also to invite you to join us in our upcoming session. Till then, I'll leave in Allah's protection. Wassalamu alaikum wa rahmatullah.
Inna fil jannati nahran laban. Inna fil jannati nahran لبن علي وحسين وحسن لعلي وحسين وحسن إن في الجنة نهرا من لبن إن في الجنة نهرا من لبن لعلي وحسين وحسن لعلي وحسين وحسن حب أهل البيت فرض عندنا حب أهل البيت فرض عندنا وبهذا الحب لا نخشى المحن
What you heard was an IRIB English radio program. Please log on to our website, www.parstoday.com/en.
in the limelight.
From Cuba to Latin America and from Southeast Asia to the West Asia, North Africa region, the U.S. engaged in acts of terrorism. And then it shamelessly uses this same label against people, groups, and countries resisting its devilish designs. The latest victim of American terrorism is Yemen's legal government led by the popular Ansarullah movement. Dear listeners, this was part of an article written by the staff of Kahan International. This article is published under the heading, U.S. Terrorism Doomed to Fail. Stay tuned for the details of this article, please. Terrorism, as generally defined by lexicons, means use of violence and intimidation, especially against civilians, in the pursuit of political aims. In other words, a person or group of persons, or still a country, resorting to such inhumane acts is rightly called terrorist. Thus, a cursory glance at the contemporary world makes us realize that the topmost terrorist without the least doubt is a country called the United States of America, and which the father of the Islamic Revolution, the late Imam Khomeini, rightly dubbed the Great Satan for its devilry on a global scale. What if such a devilish state were to brand a person or an organization as terrorist? Of course, it would be a matter of pride for the said individual or group for standing steadfast against the terrorism of the U.S. and its clients, such as the illegal Zionist entity, as well as the ruthless and unrepresentative clannish and cultish regimes of spurious states that are experts in the mass slaughter of people, the destruction of their dwellings, the desecration of their places of worship, and the eradication of the symbols of their culture. From Cuba to Latin America and from Southeast Asia to the West Asia North Africa region, the United States of America is engaged in acts of terrorism, and then it shamelessly uses this same label against people, groups, and countries, resisting its devilish designs. The latest victim of American terrorism is Yemen's legal government led by the popular Ansarullah movement. Out of distress, frustration, and inability to defeat the heroic Yemeni people through its poodles, the Saudi and the Emirati, who are supplied state-of-the-art military hardware worth billions of dollars that always turn to scrap, the United States of America has designated the Ansarullah as terrorist. Washington, or more properly, the criminal clique of the rogue called Donald Trump, cannot do a damn thing against the people of Yemen. So, in order to throw hurdles in the way of world humanitarian bodies trying to provide relief aid to the besieged people of Yemen and to embroil them in possible famine and pandemics on a nationwide scale, the U.S. has labeled the Ansarullah as such. It is, however, obvious that the Yemenis, who are the victims of the unending aggression of the Saudis and the Emiratis, who over the past 6 years have destroyed the infrastructure of Yemen and continue to target schools, mosques, wedding ceremonies, and funerals, will not yield to the invaders. As a matter of fact, they are determined to defeat international terrorism that has ganged up together against them. This is evident by the latest warning of the legal government in Sana'a that as long as the Saudis continue to bomb the civilians of Yemen, their military and industrial installations will not be safe. For the past 42 years ago, the Islamic Republic of Iran, as the prime victim of U.S. terrorism, has shown to all aspiring lawful governments and legal popular organizations that steadfast resistance is the only way to defeat terrorism. Whether Washington likes it or not, it is doomed to fail in its devilish designs, and its clients will soon meet their ignominious end, no matter what political and military aid the super terrorist provides to these mini terrorists.
You have just listened to the Voice of the Islamic Republic of Iran broadcasting. The Voice of the Islamic Republic of Iran is broadcast daily from 1520 to 1620 UTC on the following frequencies. Shortwave 41 meters 7300 kilohertz for the Indian subcontinent and FM 91.5 megahertz for Tehran. You can also listen to the Voice of the Islamic Republic of Iran on Hotbird Eutelsat 3B and IranSat or BAT 5 and via the internet. Our internet address is parstoday.com/en. And now you can listen to IRIB English Radio via your mobile phone. Please refer to our website for the details. Please send your correspondence to the English program PO Box number 19395-6767, Tehran, Islamic Republic of Iran, or email us to englishradio@irib.ir. We would be very pleased to have your comments about audio quality and other means. Thank you.
Our voice comes from the heart of beautiful Iran. IRIB English Radio.
Hadith of the day.
Here I am yearning for your cure. This humble servant will be diverted from you no more, no more, no more.
You're listening to the program Hadith of the Day on IRIB English Radio with Sheikh Yasser Ibrahim, a graduate of Islamic Seminary of Qom.
أعوذ بالله من الشيطان الرجيم بسم الله الرحمن الرحيم الحمد لله رب العالمين وصلى الله على سيدنا ونبينا ومولانا أبي القاسم المصطفى محمد وعلى أهل بيته الطيبين الطاهرين المعصومين السلام عليكم ورحمة الله وبركاته dear listeners welcome to another episode of Hadith of the Day on IRIB English Radio. One of the standout qualities or rather teachings, concepts that the mutakallimeen or the theologians in the school of the Ahlul Bayt alayhi wasalam have agreed upon is the concept of husna wa quba aqli. That is that the intellect is able to decipher that which is good and that which is bad. Meaning that the school of Ahlul Bayt alayhi wasalam is an intellectual school. It is a school that, you know, goes hand in hand with the intellect. And this is a very lengthy discussion. And obviously the philosophers and the mystics and the theologians have discussed this in their relevant books, the concept of the intellect, this concept of religion and the intellect, and so on and so forth. But this tradition that we will share with you today shows that the intellect is something that the imams themselves put great emphasis on in teaching the people, that this intellect is something that has the ability to take you towards Allah subhanahu wa ta'ala. It has the ability to guide you. And we have this in many other traditions as well, that the intellect is one of those things which guide you. Imam Ali alayhi salam is a very beautiful tradition. It's reported to have said that even if Allah subhanahu wa ta'ala had not forbidden that which he has. For example, Allah did not send down the divine law. Allah subhanahu wa ta'ala did not tell you that lying is haram. Allah did not tell you that backbiting is forbidden. Allah subhanahu wa ta'ala did not tell you that stealing is prohibited, for example. He didn't say any of this. So even if Allah subhanahu wa ta'ala had not forbidden that which he has prohibited, it would have been mandatory for the one possessing intellect to avoid them. So that person who is able to understand that lying intellectually is wrong, stealing, a person is able to understand that stealing intellectually is wrong. How? For example, I know that that thing does not belong to me. It belongs to somebody else. I cannot just go into somebody's house and take that particular thing without the permission of somebody. My intellect tells me this. That it is wrong for me to take something that does not belong to me to use without the permission of that person it belongs to. The concept of ownership is something that the intellect says that this doesn't belong to me. It belongs to somebody else. The concept of truthfulness. These are all, you know, abstract concepts that obviously the philosophers and the mystics have dealt with in detail. And obviously this is not the place to go into it. But these concepts, the intellect is able to understand. Oppression, for example. The intellect knows that oppression is bad. Stay away from it. We ask Allah subhanahu wa ta'ala to enable us to use our intellects properly, to actually train our intellects properly so that we can use it in order to get proximity towards Allah subhanahu wa ta'ala. Inshallah, until next time, my dear brothers and sisters. Assalamu alaikum wa rahmatullah wa barakatuh.
That was the program Hadith of the Day on IRIB English Radio with Sheikh Yasser Ibrahim, a graduate of Islamic Seminary of Qom.
Here I am, pleading at your door. Send me your mercy, send me your peace, or I am lost for sure. Oh Lord, here I am, yearning for your cure. This humble servant will be diverted from you no more.